Right now, though, I want to talk about a key piece of Kerry's history, and a history that's not without controversy as well, even though it happened a long time ago, 1580, the massacre at Dunanore. With me on the line is Dr. Declan Downey from the School of History of UCD, and tomorrow, Saturday, at Dyshirt, 9:30 p.m. a symposium will be held exploring the events of 1580 from the perspective of the history, the archaeology, the poetry and the literature that has arisen out of it. Declan, good morning to you and thanks for joining me in the programme.
And good morning, Gerry. Thank you for having me.
Now, for people who aren't aware, this was part of the Desmond Rebellions, and this was an event which took place, about which there is some contention, but at the same time, it was a massacre of sailors who came in and soldiers who came in to aid the rebellion.
That's right, yes. They had surrendered, and according to the rules of war, they should have been given quarter, but they weren't. It's known as Grey's Faith. Grey de Wilton was the English commander of the forces besieging Dunanore, and Sebastiano de San Giuseppe was the Bolognese commander or Italian commander of the papal forces in the fort, and Spanish. There was papal forces, Spanish volunteers, and Irish forces. And they were about 600 in the fort itself. They were arranged against a much larger army. As I say, San Giuseppe had negotiated a surrender with Grey de Wilton. And then San Giuseppe and his men had prepared a feast. They were expecting to entertain the English, and then be given transport back to the continent. But of course, as Grey de Wilton wrote in his letter to Elizabeth I, as soon as they had laid down their arms, surrendered, he sent in certain bands of men. And we know who they were led by, Walter Raleigh and Edward Denny.
And the great Sir Walter Raleigh.
The great Sir Walter Raleigh. And they in they went and they slaughtered defenseless men and women. There were women in the fort as well. So the thing is that's what happened.
Okay.
A few officers along with San Giuseppe were held captive and later ransomed and sent off on their way. But that's what happened. And much later, there were charges of cowardice, of course, against the Irish that were involved. And these were refuted vigorously by Irish exiles on the continent and as well by the Spanish and some Italians who were there. And it turned out that they all turned on San Giuseppe and accused him of cowardice. But there was an actual inquiry in Spain into the events of Dunanore. And that all came back ultimately against Walter Raleigh, because in 1604, when King James I of England, previously James VI of Scotland, when he was trying to establish a peace with Spain and bring an end to decades of warfare between both countries and increase trade and commerce again, he was persuaded by the then Spanish ambassador, Count Gondomar, to arraign Raleigh. Partly because of Raleigh's expeditions against Spanish possessions in the Caribbean, but also for Raleigh's participation in the great treachery, as it was called, at Dunanore.
Yeah, indeed. And that event at the time locally, and this is, I'd imagine, what you'll be talking about a little bit tomorrow in the symposium, yeah, is how it has been dealt with, the history, the archaeology, even the names of the fields in the area. There's a field called Gortna Geraha, a field called Gortna Gion, Field of the Heads. It was remembered in the local folklore and even in the place names of the area. Such was the shock and the story of it.
It was a traumatic experience for everyone, and particularly in the locality, because you must remember that Grey and Ormond, when they marched into the Dingle Peninsula, well, indeed, when they marched right through Munster, starting from Limerick and Kilmallock, as they marched westwards, through West Limerick, North Kerry, into Mid Kerry, West Kerry. They had a scorched earth policy. They burnt crops, houses, they slaughtered people, they drove, you know, they slaughtered animals. They, from their perspective, they wanted to create as much terror as possible so that nobody would give assistance to any of the rebels or the foreigners in the foreign troops in Munster. Because they weren't just all based in Dunanore. You know, there's the great siege of Carrigafoyle in March, April of 1580, led by Pelham. There was a slaughter and massacre of the garrison there who had surrendered as well. And they consisted also of Spanish and Italian and Irish soldiers. So there was this total scorched earth policy. And as Edmund, as the Annals of the Four Masters, and Edmund Spencer also concurs with that in their accounts, you know, there was famine. Not the lowing of a cow could not be heard from Dún Quinn to the Glen of Aherlow, nor the voice of children playing. So it was a total devastation, and you know, it took the Elizabethan regime almost 6 years to completely stamp its authority on Munster. You know, so it's from 1579 to 1585. I know we all think it all ends with the death of the Earl of Desmond, but there were still pockets of resistance after that. But and there was still the threat of another Spanish landing. Now, from the English perspective, this was a frightening event for them too, because the arrival of Spanish forces or papal forces, or indeed any foreign force, on their back door in Ireland meant that a bridgehead could be created from which an invasion could be launched into England. And England was already at war with Spain and at war with France.
Yes.
It's fighting wars on a number of fronts.
It was getting into... I suppose the element of it here for people to, if you can, you know, not to get involved in presentism, but Spain was the world superpower at the time. It was wealthier.
Right.
It had a bigger navy. England was trying to establish supremacy on the sea. So that it was like you talk about America and China today. You're talking about Great Britain or Britain and Spain back in those days. And that's why they were so sensitive to Ireland being used by the Spanish in any sort of a way.
Right.
It broke down on religious lines as well, of course.
Yeah. That's right, yes. Well, the politics was infused with religion. And you have to look at the English military commanders in Ireland at that time, from the 1570s right through the 1580s. All of them were committed Calvinists. They had served with their fellow Calvinists, the French Calvinists, the Huguenots, in the French Wars of Religion from 1562 onwards. They had also been involved with the Dutch Calvinist rebels against Philip II, because the Netherlands was then a Spanish Habsburg possession. So from 1568 onwards, there's English involvement in the Netherlands. So people like Grey de Wilton and Bingham and Raleigh and Drury, you know, all of those major Elizabethan figures in Munster during that time, and especially those who were at Dunanore, Denny and Granville and Raleigh and Grey de Wilton, they had all served against Mary, Queen of Scots, and the Catholics in Scotland, backing John Knox and the Calvinist International there when they took over in Scotland. They, in 1559 to 1567, they had also been involved with the Dutch revolt and with Leicester in the Netherlands, Richard Bingham particularly. And he was actually recalled from the Netherlands to help with countering the Spanish and the papal forces at Dunanore and to patrol the coasts.
Is that part of the reason why it was so brutal? They had been through the maelstrom of what happened in the European continent in those Reformation wars and what followed after.
They were through that, but they believed that they were part of a religious war against the Antichrist, as they regarded Roman Catholicism.
So God wills it, excuse all. Is that the case?
Yes, this was it. It was a religious war on both sides. A Reformation crusade, a counter-Reformation crusade, is declared in Dingle by Nicholas Saunders when he arrives there in July 1579. This was the call of James Fitzmaurice Fitzgerald, who initiated the whole thing. It was about delivering Catholic Ireland from the yoke of the English Calvinists. All of that, and you had the martyrdoms, remember, of Catholic clergy such as Bishop Patrick O'Healy and Father Cornelius O'Rourke at Kilmallock. They'd been martyred there in 1579, August.
I'm feeding into it. Declan, tell me briefly, finally, tomorrow at Dysart, 9:30 a.m., it's all getting underway.
It's all kicking off at 9:30, that's right, yes.
Okay. So anyone who wants to get involved, that's where to head.
I'll be speaking about the international dimension to which, the Calvinist International, explaining that. Connor Brosnan will be speaking about the actual events in Dúnanóir itself, dealing with that.
Okay.
There's Jane Grogan speaking about the Spencer and his accounts and the English literary tradition surrounding this whole thing. And then we have Micheál MacIntyre talking about the folklore connected around with the whole thing, and Fionn Barmore speaking about the archaeology. That's what I can just recall off the top
brilliant,
of my head.
Brilliant. Well, look, on Dysart.ie is the website to go to for more information on that. Declan, we're out of time, but it's fascinating stuff as always, and thanks so much for talking to us about it on the programme this morning.
Thank you very much, Jerry. All the very best.
There you go. That's Dr. Declan Downey there, School of History, UCD, on that symposium, The Massacre at Dúnanóir. Well, we're checking out tomorrow. We've more on the way after we take these.